Mishlei Yirches. We're in the middle of the 18th, the Chai chapter of Mishlei. We're in Pasuk Hey. Okay, Pasuk Hey. The Pasuk tells us, Se'es Pnei Rasha Lo Tov. When I first read this Pasuk, I read it probably mistakenly, and then I found someone who explains it the way I thought it said it. So I guess it wasn't a mistake retroactively, but Pnei Rasha Lo Pnei, Se'es Pnei Rasha Lo Tov. That the lifting up or the favoritism, like Yisa Hashem Panav, the Se'es Pnei Rasha, that the favoring of the Rasha is not good. Lahatos Tzadik Vamishpat, to sway the judgment of a righteous person in judgment, in justice. So what's interesting about this is it's unclear what is the Lotov is going on, right? You can say Pnei Rasha. Seis Pnei Rasha Lotov, the favoring of the wicked is not good. You could also say Lotov Lahatos Tzadik Vamishpat, but it's also not good to sway the judgment of the righteous person. Now, in terms of the punctuation grammatically, it would seem that the Lotov goes on the favoring of the evil person, of the fool, of the wicked person. But if one were to look at the Mitzvot David, you'll see that the word lo tov, milas lo tov, chozer lemala ulamata. This is one of those interesting examples where a phrase, I don't know how often this happens, a phrase can be used for both the beginning part and the end part of a pasuk, which is not typical, and it's not in any way how people would write. But it's almost like the word nor can, you know, it's bad to do this, nor that. You should also not do that. So, Se'es Pnei Rasha Lo Tov and Lo Tov La'atos Tzadik V'Mishpat, but according to Mr. Tzavid, it's both bad to give favoritism of the wicked and it's bad to give favoritism or to sway in any way the judgment of a tzaddik. Now, because the Mitzvot Tzavid says it like that, it sounds almost like two separate statements, but obviously the same pasuk. So in one way that you are, in the same way that you are giving favoritism to the wicked, you are also thereby swaying the judgment off of, away from, you know, into the non-favor of the righteous. And that's what the Mitzvot David himself says. Hanoseh Pnei Rasha L'Zakoso B'Mishpat. If someone, for some reason, gives this a favor towards the wicked in a judgment, Hine Kfula Chataso, his sin, his wrongdoing is doubled. Ki Nasa Pnei Rasha V'Hitha Mishpat HaTzadik Asher Shneim Lo Tovim. That both the favoritism and the short strawing of the tzaddik are both wrong. Now, when I read this, I actually instinctively thought of an idea that, when reading it again, as I said before, didn't make any sense. But then I saw it in the Ralbag. So let's read the Ralbag for those who have the brown book. This is on a Reish Gimel 203. Says the Ralbag, Hinei lo tov laseis pnei rasha b'mishpat lahatos mishpat atzarek. It's not good to show favoritism of the wicked, because that will sway the judgment of the tzaddik too. Ki yikre im yichabed ha'ish hashofet l'rasha v'mishpat ahu, if you will give honor or give credence to, it doesn't mean yisa, meaning give him greater favoritism in the sense that you're going to let him, you know, give him leniency, but rather that you're going to show him some credibility. You're going to give him, you know, the time of day. Yechabed ha'ish ha'shafet l'rashta b'mishpat ahu. So then yisatimu ta'anos ha'tzadik. Then it will close off or seal the judgment of the righteous. Ha'cholik imo l'chashvo kidas ha'shofet krova el shekinegdo. It's kind of a cryptic way of saying it, but says the Ralbag, when you show favor or when you give too much time of day to the Rasha, so then ultimately, what's the Tzaddik going to think? Right? The judge, imagine a court case where the judge is looking and listening to every single in and out of the defendant, let's say, the Rasha, the wicked person is the defendant, so he's listening and listening, listening, and the Tzaddik is sitting there and saying, like, what? Why is he listening to him so much? He's clearly favoring him and therefore the tzaddik is going to be less willing or less confident in his remarks. And at least according to the Ralbag, yisatzmu ta'anos tzaddik, he will seal off, he will close off, he will not give over as much of his own claims. I don't know if anyone's watched, these family court shows or whatever it is, yeah. You know, like Judge Judy or something like that. So this sometimes does happen where, Judge Judy is listening to the person who's probably doing something wrong more and more and more. She's doing it in order to find out what they did wrong. And the other person is like, yeah, but, and Judge Judy's just like, be quiet. Don't worry about it. I'm going to take care of it. But the person wants to talk so badly that they get so anxious about it. And Judge Judy has to like reaffirm them, don't worry, like I know what I'm doing, basically. You know, and then she gets them in some kind of inconsistency and points it out, and then, you know, all is fine, but the other person doesn't know that. So they get all anxious about it. So that's what this pasuk is saying. Don't do that. As a judge, don't show exceeding favoritism in terms even of exceeding intention. Not just in terms of saying, yes, you're right, or yes, I believe you, or yes, whatever, but in terms of giving them too much attention when somebody else is there. Now, what's interesting also about this is that the attention issue is only an issue when it's lahatos tzadik v'mishpat. And this is something that I think we don't do a good enough job of in society, although it's difficult to do it, so it's not like I'm blaming any one specific person, but the only problem with giving a rasha the time of day is when it comes at the cost of someone who's doing the right thing. Now, that is obviously a problem. But what it means is that if it's not coming at a cost, and this may be looking into it too much, but if it's not coming at a cost of doing the right thing or giving to the person that's doing the right thing, so then there is no or there is little justification of at least giving the rasha the time of day. Right? When it says, the reason why it's not good to show favoritism, to listen, to give the time of day to the rasha, is only in a case where it would sway the judgment of the righteous person. But if there's a person who's maybe not so good, and he maybe needs some attention, so you should give him attention. If all else is equal, you should give that person attention. There's a story, a Shlomo Carlach story, where he talks about some Rebbe, I forgot which Rebbe it was, that it was Baal Shem, I think, I'm second guessing myself. But the Baal Shem Tov was, I don't remember if it was the Baal Shem Tov. I don't think it was. Let's assume it was some Hasidic Rebbe. And at one point, there was a thief that came to the Rebbe for a bracha that the police shouldn't catch him. A thief. The Rebbe says, what are you talking about? Why would I give you a bracha? For a thief, you should be caught. You should be, given the consequences. And he said, oh, you're not your father. That's what he says. What do you mean I'm not my father? My father gave me the mantle of leadership over the Hasidus. That means, he says, no, whenever I came to your father, he would always give me a bracha that I should have, that Hashem should have mercy on me. And Rav Shlomo Carlach would finish this. Obviously, there are more intricacies and details to the story. But Shlomo Carlach would finish off the story, and he would say, every Rebbe wants to be a Rebbe of Tzaddikim. But who's going to be the Rebbe for the thieves? And there's some chachma to that. Obviously, slippery slope and whatever. But there is some chachma to that. There are people in society that, for one reason or another, have been cast aside. They've been neglected, or no one wants to deal with them. They've just been sort of castigated towards a life of prison or a life of the streets, and really all they need is some attention. All they need is a listening ear and perhaps some time just to talk out what they're going through. I remember hearing from a mentor of mine once about going into Rabbanus, right? This is going back 10 years. I heard this from him, and it still stays with me. And he said, we live in the Jewish world, the Jewish community is structured in such a way where we play this big sifting game where, and this he's really talking about the East Coast, because obviously there are many more choices of schools, but you talk about these kids that apply to high schools when they're in eighth grade, and they get rejected from high school. Right? That tells, that sounds like crazy to us, but that's what happens in the East Coast. You have all these, the good schools, right? I can name them for you, but you might already know them already, MTA, SAR, PABC, those are good schools, right? And Central for girls, you know. And these kids get rejected from those schools. So this Rav says, like, you know, who are the people that end up in smicha, that end up becoming rabbis? They're the ones that have insisted away from all these kids. All these kids who didn't go to your high school, who didn't make it to your yeshiva, who didn't get the best of the educational opportunities that you got because of whatever instances. And you know what happens? You become the rabbi. And then those kids that you've been sifted away from, you've been told to stay away from your entire life, they end up in the back row of your shul. What are you going to do with those kids? These are guys that grew up in completely different ways, that grew up without the opportunities that you had, and now they're your congregants. So what are you going to do? You're going to keep the trend going and continue sifting them away from Yiddishkeit, sifting them away from the same opportunities that you were granted? Maybe you have to be the one to say, you know, it's time to give them some attention also. And it was very insightful advice. I wasn't even thinking of Rabbanus at the time, but it definitely gives a different picture as to how we should treat the Rishayim also. How we should treat the people that have gone through the ringer, that have been through a lot, for one reason or another, not necessarily entirely on their own will, but because of their parents were in a situation, or their, you know, whatever it is, whatever family situation, school situation, you know, whatever they had to go through. So then they ended up becoming what we would call a Rasha, a wicked person who makes bad decisions. But I think, you know, this is just, you know, this is somewhat of a tangent because the pasuk is not talking about this, but the implication of the pasuk is the only time that it's not good to show favoritism towards the Rasha is when it is lahatos sarik b'mishpat, when it does come to as a consequence for the righteous person. But if there is no consequence towards somebody who is doing the right thing, and really maybe the only issue is your own time, your own patience, your own discomfort, so then maybe it is a time for a seis pnei rasha. Maybe we do have to give a little more attention to those people. Now it's a delicate act because you have to protect yourself also. There are some rushes that are really rushes, even with the rabbi, you know? So you have to be careful in how you tread carefully in those situations. But that's everyone to their own devices, you know, unfortunately with that one. All right, I can go with some other anecdotes, but we'll continue talking. Let's continue talking. We'll go with Pasuk Vav here. Pasuk Vav is a fascinating one. This is what I will call the Pasuk of the Contrarian. And perhaps people know people like this. Sivsek Seol Yavo Beriv. The lips of a fool will bring about fighting. Upiv Lamahalumos Yikra. Some of these words are difficult to translate, at least in context. But if you look at the Rabbeinu Yonah, which you don't have, if one were to look at Rabbeinu Yonah tells us a very interesting read of this pasuk. He says, "Derech bnei Adam behisvach kam," that when it comes to a person who gets in a disagreement, they argue, they're talking about something, and then they happen to disagree. So then, kiyichas ish al divrei chaver lifhamim achrei hatochacha. When does a person get upset, get angry? After you have already discussed the issue. You say one thing, the other person says the other thing, then they inquire, then you interrogate, and then it builds up to a ka'as level, a level of anger, which is also not good. No one's saying that that's good. However, there are other types of people. Haksil, the fool, kasher yana al divrei chaverav, when he listens to his friend, or fellow, I should say, they're not waiting for an escalation. They're starting with anger. They're starting with disagreement. I'm sure you know these types of people. And maybe it's born out of your relationship with them, or maybe it's just born out of their natural personality. Not natural personality, but the personality they've developed. That they're so insecure, they're so self-conscious, they automatically assume that what you're going to say is something they have to disagree with. Not just disagree, but disagree vociferously. You find this a lot in politics. You can't have, some people are incapable of having incapable of having a calm and polite conversation when it's with the enemy, right? I always find it interesting that this has become like a trend I've seen, you know, in debates, whether it's presidential or otherwise, that one of the questions, especially at the end of the debate after they've gone after each other, you know, one of the end questions will be, say something nice about the other person. And it's so, like, almost cringy, the inability for them. Yeah. And it's always some kind of, like, half-true, you know, oh, they're so good at rallying their base, or something like that. Okay, fine, you just gotta, you know, but sorry for those on the thing here. I got a phone call. I'm not sure. I guess that's a phone tree or something. Waiting for the Zoom to come back on. Sorry, everyone. Got a phone call. I should really stop doing that. But hold on. Trying to make sure that doesn't happen again. Okay. I'm already on sleep mode, so why did that happen? I don't know. All right. We're going to do our best to just continue. Hopefully no one else calls me. But the point is that there are some people in the world that are so insecure or so self-conscious or so have such animus that the argument or their intensity is there already when the other person is talking. It's not that it builds up, that they have a disagreement and then it gets heated, but that they're already heated just by hearing the other person talk. They're already trying to think of how to, and there are people like this that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you say or how you say it. They're always going to disagree. Always going to disagree. And this is, you know, in less severe terms, there are people like this that will never, and it's not even out of animus. They're just never going to allow somebody else to say something they think is correct. Right? It's always that they have to be the one that's correct. And for those types of people, there are interesting strategies how to, you know, with a reverse psychology that you can get them to get to your side. You know, I'm not going to go into any examples, but the point is that there are people like that, that they're always going to disagree, they're always going to look for the other side, not necessarily because they hate you, just because they're contrarian individuals. And I don't know where that comes from. I can imagine, you know, a psychologist, especially a Freudian psychologist, have a field day trying to understand the underpinnings of this person's childhood, their upbringing, the relationships that made them so in denial about everything. But the point is that a lot of it comes from insecurity, generalized insecurity, that they're so insecure that they feel like they have to always prove themselves. And that's what it says here. Pete is that Tzitzik, that the fool, his mouth is very interesting. Not his mouth, his lips will bring about fights. The Rabbeinu Yonah also explains here that specifically the lips, kisfasav melumados lachlok velariv below machshav mukdemes ledivarav, that one's mouth is the inside, one's lips are the outside. It's almost as if, and this is part of the next pasuk also, it's almost as if his lips are doing it for him. I mean, there's like an instinctive response that his lips just start to deny. His lips just start to, you know, argue. It's not that they thought about it. It's not that they have some kind of internal problem with what the person said. It's just that their lips are just automatically disagreeing. You know, there's some people, and this is getting back to what I was saying before, there's some people, it doesn't matter what you say, any time that you try to posit, like a claim or suggest something, they'll always first say no, no, no. Yeah. Or they'll say, no, no, it's like this. Or not really, it's like this. It's like, you really agree with me, but you just started the sentence with the word no, so now you have to disagree. It's almost like their instinct is to say no. So here, that's what I think of, right? Tzitzik, sil yavo bariv, not necessarily on that level, but there are some people that have that instinctive way of speaking, that they just automatically will agree or disagree with everything you say, and it just sort of it corners them into what they have to say afterwards. Upiv l'mahalumos yikra. So this word is a very interesting word, lemahalu most. Most mefarshim explain that it means some kind of hitting, some kind of blows. Anyone who's I didn't catch that, Sharon, hold on. But anyone who's been watching the news today probably heard about what happened last night in the coveted Oscars, which everyone watches except for everyone that doesn't watch. I don't know if anyone else is fuzzy, but the only reason it's being talked about, at least in our circles, is because of a certain actor that felt the need to go slap the person that said probably a bad joke, but now everyone's giving their own two cents as if there's something to talk about when somebody slaps another person across the face, as if that's some kind of justified activity. But here you have upiv l'mahalu mos yikra, that a person's mouth can bring about hitting yikra. It's sort of calling you, you're asking for it, basically. You're asking to be hit. Now, whether last night's statement actually elicit or falls into this category, I would say no with most things. But the point is that some fools will speak to such harsh levels that they're asking for it. They're asking for it. That doesn't mean that it's justified when somebody would do it, but that's how they're asking for it. The Rabbeinu Yonah actually says that it's not referring to a to just what they're saying, but the way that they're saying it, right? The Rabbeinu Yonah says lashon hachraza v'tzaka. It's like you're screaming. The word yikra means like you're screaming. Yitzok v'yabia kol l'mahalamos hacholikimo. To the extent that the person will want to hit them. Right, the person that disagrees with them. We should learn that we should not raise our voices in disagreement and in argument, which is obviously easier said than done sometimes. But nonetheless, an ever-present danger and responsibility to keep our voices down to such an extent that I remember learning this in. I remember learning this in social work school, that if you have a parent or a discipliner who maybe sometimes does scream at the person at their child or at their student or whatever, even when they don't scream, the student or child will interpret it as a scream. You know, I don't know if anyone's experienced this maybe with a teenager, you know, stop yelling at me. But you just asked them to clean their room. It wasn't like you were yelling, it wasn't like you were angry. Stop yelling at me, right? Because that's how they interpret any ridicule becomes a scream. So you always have to be very careful about growing into that habituation so that the person doesn't always interpret everything you say as that kind of thing, because obviously that becomes an ever-present tension that's difficult to get out of. But I'm sure some people, you know, can relate to that. Yeah. No, I get it with my little kids also. You know, it happens. But either way, so that is sort of a continuation of that is what you find in the next pasuk in Zion. Pi chisil mechita lo. That the mouth.
One of my kids said something.
Yeah.
One of my kids said something to me that explains that he says, you know, you don't have to be screaming to be yelling.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. But, I mean, technically there is a definition of the word yell. But I hear what you're saying, that sometimes the yell goes beyond just volume. It goes sort of into tone and what you're asking of a person, yeah. So pi ksil mechita lo. Mechita is a very interesting word also. Mechita could be destruction. I don't know, how do you translate that in the Tanakh you have, Sarita? This is 18:7. The mouth of the fool is a? A ruin, okay. Mechita lo is something that could destroy him. The way that he speaks just destroys him. I find this to be a very instructive pasuk, similar to what we said before, that the mouth of the fool is almost like a dissociated aspect of the person, meaning it's not like the fool is controlling the mouth, it's the mouth is controlling the fool, right? Pi kisil mechita lo, that the mouth will ruin the fool. It's not like the fool is trying to say these things, but he's grown, or he or she has grown into such habituation into how they're speaking, that it's almost as if the mouth is getting them in trouble. You know, yeah, your mouth is getting you in trouble. Not because they wanted to say it, but because that's who they are. That's how they've habituated themselves. What are we up to? We're up to Pasuk Zion, right?
Yeah,
Zion. Piksu mechitalav usfastav mokesh nafsho. So now back to the lips. And the lips are a stumbling block to us all, same kind of idea. However, if you look at, and obviously, that's the job for all of us. Before we look at the Ralbag again, that's the job for all of us to make sure that we are controlling our mouths and our mouths are not controlling us. And when I say our mouths controlling us, what I really mean is that our instinctive mind using our mouth, but to habituate ourselves, to practice, to regulate ourselves, to filter, to maybe pause before we speak, a great way of doing this, because it's not so easy when it comes to something which is, it's not so easy when it comes to a threatening argument, or when it comes to sort of when your defenses are up, it's difficult to learn it in that moment how to not say something back. It's hard to not, you know, it's hard to not talk back when you're being accused or threatened. A good way to practice this is not when that moment comes, but rather when you have something good to say, or when you have something that you like when a person is saying it. So it's much easier to pause in that moment than it, because you don't feel the need to respond, but you still want to say something, so it's easier to sort of practice that, to pause, to sort of digest mentally, and then to respond in the good moments, so that when it comes to the bad moments, you'll have that skill, you'll have that ability. There are other strategies for this. For instance, if you know you're going into a contentious discussion with somebody, you know you disagree about something, you set a meeting, whatever it might be, maybe you have an interview with your boss or whatever, and you know it's going to be contentious. So then pre-play that interview in your mind. I was just listening to a podcast about a book that I really loved earlier this year, called Decoding Greatness. I've definitely talked about it. Ron Friedman, I think, is his name. And he talks about, and this is also something from Power of Moments, but his brother's preloading, right, to envision what's going to happen and thereby, right, do your research and then thereby be prepared when those questions happen. You won't be thrown off. You won't feel threatened. You won't feel, you know, like you have to get defensive about it because you've already thought about that. And therefore, it's not like you're being caught off guard and you have to already put your shield up. Right? So that kind of thing can also be helpful. That's peak seal mechitalo. That's the mouth of a fool who doesn't have that filtration process, who doesn't have that ability to calm himself, to prepare, or to pause. So that person, that their mouth is going to just be their ruin, because their mouth is going to be unfiltered and just saying things back to the person that's going to get them in trouble. Usfasav mokesh nafsho, and his lips are going to be a stumbling block, a trap for his soul, which is an interesting phrase. What does that mean? Mokesh nafsho. Usfasav mokesh nafsho. I don't know what this means. I really don't. But I can imagine that maybe we can understand it. Maybe it can be interpreted to mean that this kind of attitude, which is on the outside, usvasav, which is external, which is habitual, which is something you can't control because your lips are just doing it, it's dissociated from who you are, it will ultimately ensnare your actual essence. Because the more that you'll be incapable of controlling what's going on the outside, the more that persona is going to seep into your inside. You'll naturally become that person through osmosis, through that kind of personnel. You'll become that person. You'll just step into that role. There are interesting sociological studies that talk about sort of this is really different, but it brings home a similar point, which is that there are some studies that talk about how certain populations, if they are deemed to be a certain way, after a while they'll actually assume that identity, even if it's not true, right? Whether it's, racist, stereotypes, or it's some kind of, the place that they live, the externality that we talked about, broken windows theory, those externalities will ultimately affect you, that you will assume that identity after a while. So maybe that's what it means here. Usvasav mokesh nafsho, your own lips, your externals, your lips, even your own lips, will ultimately affect who you are on the inside. Now, if you look at the Ralbag takes a different approach to this pasuk. Well, not necessarily such a different approach, but I'm going to take it in a different way. after looking at the Ralbag. The Ralbag says, and this is also in Reish Gimel, peak seal, Zion, the top of the left column, towards the top, Divrei Aktil Him Mevim Chitas Veshiva Veshever. They're going to bring destruction. Vehem Mokesh Nasho Kigorim Ra Lasmo. He's going to ultimately bring evil upon himself. Mitzdadim Rabim, from many different angles. Kibahem Yecharach El Riv Iman Hashim. He's going to start fights. Via Zeh Siba Lo Liros Liraos Gedolos. That's where you start fights with people. It's going to end up being bad for you. Umehem ki misat tichluso yachshav harbi pamim lomar mashu ozer lo behashpato. You'll think many times about what you think will help you, right? Behishapto esrei. You'll think that this comeback maybe is going to help you in the judgment of you between you and your friend. Via inyan behafach, and it's really going to backfire, right? You think you have some kind of witty comment that you want to sort of get in there because you think it's such a good comeback. Ultimately, it's going to be insulting. It's going to hurt you in the end of the day. And part of the things that an evil person would do, a foolish person would do, kihu yigale hadavar shiray al shayastir. He will reveal that which is supposed to be hidden. That's what we call a secret. If you give up secrets, v'yazeh siba lebilbul riv b'inyanav uvimivukshav. Right, it will confuse people in his dealings and in his requests. Brené Brown talks about this in her book Daring Greatly, the importance of maintaining integrity with secrets, because sometimes we think to ourselves, and wrongfully so, that I'll build trust with this person when I can tell them a secret. You know, someone so and so told me such and such a thing. You know, but I can trust you. I can trust you and tell you the secret. When in reality, Brené Brown says that subconsciously what that person is really hearing is, I can't tell you any secrets. You're not a trustworthy person. You might think that that's going to curry favor. Well, yeah, now we're really close friends. It's not true. Because what that person learns about you is, if it's for your own benefit, you're trying to make a friend, the next time you tell them your secret, it's going to ultimately hurt you in the end of the day. And that's actually going to backfire. So it's such a fascinating Ralbag, because what it means is that the Ksil is not necessarily a bad person. I mean, they're just foolish, because their foolishness is bringing them to believe that giving up a secret is going to help them. And really, it's behefech, as the Ralbag says. It's going to hurt them in the end of the day. It's going to erode their integrity. It's going to erode their trustworthiness, even with the person that they're speaking to. Not simply not work or not help. It's going to actually backfire on them. A very interesting take from the Ralbag. Moving on to Pasuk Ches. Divrei Nirgan Kimis Lahamim. Divrei Nirgan. Nirgan is also an interesting word. Nirgan, Rashi tells us, is Mehalomos. Mehalomos. Doesn't really tell us, but Matura Sion and others explain that Nirgan is someone who complains. I don't know where the word comes from. Rognim is someone who sort of pelts other people, I think, but
like Narganut.
What is that?
Like Narganut. Narganut is like negativity.
Negativity. Okay, I don't know where the word comes from. I know Rognim means to throw something at somebody, I think, but I don't know if this is related to that word. Either way, Nirgan means a complainer. Someone who complains is Kimis Lahamim. Kimis Lahamim is a very interesting word. It sounds almost passive or reflexive. Mis Lahamim. They are being, we know this word Mis Lahamim from the word from before, Mahalumos. They are being beaten up. The person who is complaining is the one being beaten up. This is a fascinating topic for the 21st century. And not even 21st century, the last few years. Let's see how the Mitzvah Sion understands. Inyan haka ha-mishaber z'vuhifach min halom. Okay, hold on. Let's see the actual Mitzvah David. Divrei mislon in him akashim kemakos. Most understand it this way, that the complainer is like hitting a person. the Vilna Gaon says, and this is the end of the pasuk, Vehem yardu chadrei batan. Those complaints go so, they dig, they get cut so deep. When a person complains about something, it cuts so deep. I remember, and especially if they complain to a person that was responsible for that thing, right? And especially when you're young or inexperienced, insecure. So those complaints can really hurt you. You can take them very personally, and it's something I worked on. You know, it's difficult for me also. You know, I make a lot of executive decisions here at the shul. And when someone complains about the davening, when someone complains about a program, I always, my instinct is to take it personally, and then I have to sort of backtrack my mind and say, it's not me, it's them, or it's the shul. And it's not always the case that a complaint is necessarily means that we did the wrong thing. Sometimes a complaint is just a reality. It's not always the case that there's a better alternative. And that's always important for everyone to remember, but when people complain, they don't always realize that it's not always a choice between good and bad. It's sometimes a choice between bad and worse. And if there's no better alternative, so yeah, you can complain about it, but this is what we had to do. And you have to keep that in mind. That happened a lot over COVID. Why are we doing this? Why are we doing that? Well, what's the other alternative? You know, getting everybody else upset. Right? Why do we have to have this? I don't want to get into examples, but I'm sure you can apply it yourself. Yeah. So everything cuts in two ways. So the point is that we have to be very careful that these our complaints, when we complain about something, and we especially when we frame it as a personal complaint, it cuts very deep. Yardu chadrei batin. Chadrei batin is the inner, you know, the inner belly, the inner core of your belly. That's what it means, chadrei batin. We say this word actually in, I think it's in an Unasana Tokas. Chofes ko chadrei batin. In the land of no, we say it in the Shemoneh Esrei. Chofes Hashem searches even the chadrei batin. He knows us on the deepest of levels. So here, this complaint can go all the way into the depths of our kishkas, such a complaint. And it's very important to realize that the way that we complain is an important thing to revise. You know, the way that we talk to other people about things that are difficult for us. The Vilna Gaon points out that this is, I think actually Mitzuda David looks like he's also saying it. Aval hamakos hema mimau al haguf ha'achaz b'derech malitza komer hinei hamakos asher hema mimau noch l'rafosam. Yeah, he said the same as the Vilna Gaon. That bruises on our bodies, we can figure those out. Taras aside for the second, which is this week's parsha. But you get a bruise on your body, you put some cream on it, you go to the doctor, they look at it, you go to dermatologist, whatever. That's one thing. You can figure that out. Masha Inkin Makos Pachadri Batan. If you have a complaint or you feel insulted on the inside, says in Surah David, Kashal Rapos Divraham Isloni, it's very difficult to heal a character wound. A wound of a complaint somebody levels at you, that's gonna stick with you. And it's so true. The things that I've taken personally, I know exactly who said them, when they said them, and it's hard to shake it. It's really hard to shake it. A person makes a complaint, and you take it personally, it's hard to get rid of it. Very hard to get rid of it. And it's chadrei batin. That's what he means here. You know, that's what the Mitzvah Sabbat means. Kasha l'rapos divrei mislonei. It's difficult to heal those wounds. So those have to be very careful. And on the flip side, when we're taking those complaints, you have to work on, and that's what I said, you have to work on, we all can always be better, at not taking things personally, at sort of dissociating from the complaints itself. Easier said than done, but that is our responsibility, so that those wounds don't last for a long time. And that does not mean that you hold back feedback from anybody. That doesn't mean that that if you find something which needs improvement, you don't tell somebody, because that would harbor more issues later on, right? That's close to the sense of chichibul lavecha. You don't want to harbor issues. If you have something to say, you got to say it. It's about how you say it. That's the key. I have something else here. I forgot. Oh, yes. The Rabbeinu Yonah. This is an unbelievable Rabbeinu Yonah on this pasuk here. Divrei nirgan kimislahamim. Nirgan hu ba'al hatzlunah. the one who is doing this is a complainer. Shemislonin tamin al rayav. He's constantly complaining about his fellow man. V'yitz pesem b'divrayem uvemaaseyem v'yadun bahem. Right? They are constantly, this is such a fascinating way to read the pasuk. They are constantly assuming in the words of their friend and in their actions that they're doing so. Niskavnu liklono ulinazko. They're constantly thinking, the complainer is constantly thinking, you did that to hurt me. You did that to insult me. You did that because you don't like me. Umitzra'im alehem. And he complains about them. V'hinei mitzra'im ki'ilu heim ne'alavim v'nirdafim v'hilumim. V'heim yairdu chadre batzen. They'll make it as if they're always being insulted. They'll make it as if they're always the victim. There are people like this that have an invested interest in making themselves a victim. You find this a lot. This is what I meant earlier when I said the 21st century idea. I really mean the last 2 years. Divrei tfunas hanirgan nogim ad hanafesh. That kind of complainer, it affects them into their soul. Ki kasher yizaher chaver b'chol libo ulishem v'nizko klono yashimei ochinam v'yachateo b'davar. When a person is very careful with all of his heart to not offend somebody, and then they still get offended, even if the person has good intentions, the person is trying to help them, but they assume that they're doing something to hurt them. V'hu yidon behefech b'masav v'b'dvarav v'nehu k'meshiv ra'a tachas tova. He is replacing goodness with badness, with nefarious. He's just assuming nefarious intention. Oh, you're doing that because of this. Or you're doing that because of that. There's so many people like this. Oh my gosh, it's such a difficult thing to see. When you try to help a person and they just assume that you're really not doing it, or you're only doing this because of that. Recently, I did something for somebody that I probably wouldn't do for anybody else. And in the middle of it, I said, you know, like, I'll do it, but it's a little complicated. You know, you gave me the wrong stuff to do it for you. And he's like, Rabbi, if you don't want to do it, then just tell me. I'm trying to do it. I'm really, but like, he was so convinced. And this also could be, you know, psychologically embedded within him because of other people that have done things to him, whatever. But I was literally trying to help, but I literally couldn't do it with the stuff. And his first instinct was, oh, that's because you don't want to do it. Which is a sad reality. But that's how some people are. They feel like they're being victimized all the time. That's not necessarily nefarious. That could just be an instinct that they've grown into because of what other people have done to them. I had another situation 2 years ago. I remember this pretty vividly also. I was trying to help a woman, get them services, get them money. I got them services that they needed. And then maybe a week passed, and I didn't do enough in her mind. And she starts writing me these nasty emails, not just about me, but about Judaism, about the whole community. And after a moment, I realized, like, this woman needs to be a victim. She doesn't want to get on her own 2 feet. Because once she gets on her own 2 feet, and this is sort of my social work justification of it, which other people agreed with when I discussed it with them, was that this woman is afraid of being in charge of her own life. She's afraid, what's going to happen if I do get on my own 2 feet? I get those services, and then it works. And such and such works out, and the other thing works out, and then I have to be responsible for myself. So instead of taking the services, going as much as she can, working, putting the effort in, she instead decided, and this is not necessarily a conscious decision on her part, it could be a subconscious thing, that she doesn't, that this is sort of the mind frame that she needs to be in to feel comfortable, that it's always somebody else's fault, so that she has something to fall back on when things don't go well. Because if things don't go well and she's in control, then it's her fault. Then there's nobody else to blame. And therefore, before it gets to that stage, she cuts off the ability for herself. And this is like a deep idea, and I wouldn't necessarily recommend anyone think that about another person. But, you know, this might have been a strategy for me to not take it personally, because I was putting a lot of work into this person's situation. And they were also barely a member So it really wasn't even worth my time, but whatever. So I took it very personally. I took it very personally because I had done a lot for the person, and they were so ungrateful and so critical that this is sort of how I sort of, you know, and again, I discussed with somebody else. It wasn't just my own assessment that this is how the person was. They needed to be a victim. That's what it means here. Divrei nirgan kimislahamim, says Rabbeinu Yonah. What do you mean, mislahamim? It's reflexive. A person who's complaining, such a beautiful read of the pasuk. A person who's complaining, divrei nirgan, the words of a complainer, kimislahamim. Mislahamim, laham, as we said before, means to hit, to blow, right? To strike somebody. That was from pasuk vav. We saw the mahalum al sikra. They're asking for it, right? They're asking for. So here it says, kimis lahamim. The words of the complainer are as if they are being targeted. Mis lahamim, it's reflective. They're the ones that are being wronged. The words of a complainer, it might sound like they're complaining, but really what they're doing is they're making themselves the victim. They need to feel wronged in order to justify themselves. Vehem yaridu chadrei batan, and those complaints will go to the deepest depths. The Rabbeinu Yonah doesn't say this, but I think what it could mean is that it gets to their personality. They become that kind of person, that they have a victim complex, an inferiority complex perhaps, an insecurity perhaps, a self-consciousness perhaps, that they turn into a victim mentality. And you see this too much, way too much in the news, way too much in social media trends, and this happened with this situation from the Oscars last night also, that everyone's now a victim. If you suffer from this thing, that, you know, all the support groups come out and say, yeah, go, whatever. I don't want to get into it because it's such a silly thing to talk about. But the point is that all the victimized people say, yes, T-Sealy, as the Gemara says, give me, I deserve something, you know, because I've become a victim, which is a very, very difficult thing to undo from a person. And this is just to sort of, to name a book if you want to read more about this trend or this development in the modern world, the book The Coddling of the American Mind by Jonathan Haidt talks about this a lot. Talks about, you know, this crazy situation. And there are a lot of these, unfortunately, that have happened more and more, especially on college campuses, where like a dean or a head of school said an innocent comment. And they didn't say it with enough disclaimers, or they didn't say it with enough, you know, neutral language, that it becomes this big, huge thing. You can look at these stories that there's a famous case, the Evergreen State, and people can look it up on their own, about this type of thing. He talks about in this book that we've become, but especially certain segments of the population have become victimizing seekers. They're looking for ways to become victims so that they can feel more, you know, entitled, right? Secure, maybe, right? So they can feel this sense of entitlement and perhaps purpose, or what was one thing I was going to say? Where they feel some kind of virtue. I was going to say it's also a buzzword, but just to connect it to the next pasuk, maybe we'll continue this pasuk next time. But the pasuk says in test, gam isrape mivlachto ach hu leval mashkes. The words of a complainer, like one who grows lax in his work, is also a brother to a destructive person. Such an interesting phrase. That the person who is mitrape, that does not mean healed, because it's with a hey. Mitrape means like rifyon yadayim, means lazy. They're not doing things properly. They're not invested in something, but they are loose bimlachto. They're lazy workers. They don't put in effort when they work. Ahu lebal mashvas. It's a cousin of, right? It's sort of like a poetic phrase that they're the brother of the destroyer, right? That's the same type of person that just destroys things, like the complainer. So some of the Ibn Ezra points out, how does this connect to what we said before? Actually, Al-Shaf points out, the Ibn Ezra says the opposite, but which one's first, the laziness or the complaining, right? The pasuk of the complaining was first, and then came the laziness. But one could say that the laziness comes to complainers. Because people who are lazy, who don't want to work, they'll find other ways to justify why they're not going to work, right? The real reason is because they want to put in the effort. It's a lot easier to blame somebody else than to put in the energy, time, and effort to do something yourself. oh, you know, all these people that don't get jobs until they're much older or whatever, you know, the caricature of the son who lives in his mom's basement until he's 35, that type of thing. Like, they're lazy, but they'll always have some complaints. They'll always have who to blame, so to say that they're justified in their own way. I don't mean to offend anyone. If anyone's going through that situation, it's not easy, and it's not necessarily something to joke about. But the point is that there's oftentimes an underlying laziness, which is causing the complaints to come out. The person doesn't really want to put in the effort, and that's why everything's a problem. That's why they'll always find something to poke a hole into, because they don't really want to do the work, and they're afraid, as I said before, from that anecdote in my own life, they're afraid to really take the responsibility upon themselves, and instead they will blame others so that others can take care of them, or at least others won't blame them for their state in life. There's a lot more to talk about there. I don't want to get too critical. Been a little too negative, too harsh, too critical of our society tonight, but as you can imagine, a lot to be said for these psukim, and all the psukim were framed in the negative. That's why, you know, Shlomo HaMelech was really the one that did. Shlomo HaMelech started it. Anyway, the point is, a lot to learn from these psukim. Mir Tashem, we can take them to heart. Be kinder to people, even if they are wicked. Be more patient with people, even if they're fools, and make sure we don't take things as personally. Okay, everyone have a good night. Next week, I believe we'll do Legends and Lessons. Mir Tashem. Rosh Chodesh on Shabbos, Rosh Chodesh Nisan.